ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Presented by Zadok Jewelers. KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant at the G, Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Pitch is hit hard down the line. That is a fair ball and will score a run. Margot comes around third. He's going to score. Miranda into second base gives the Twins a lead here in the eighth, 4-3. RBI double for Jose Miranda. Tied the game in the sixth and now gives the Twins a lead in the eighth.
Yeah, that was a game that was better suited for Roku TV, which is apparently a new outlet for Major League Baseball. Hello and welcome aboard Gallant and George on Monday, June 3rd, 2024. I am Paul Gallant. He is Joe George. Sean Mapes behind the glass. The Astros, Joe, dropped 2 of 3 this weekend, and here we are again.
Yeah, same old stuff. It's just another day that ends in Y, a weekend that is disappointing for the Astros. We tried to start the season over, Paul. We tried to start the season over. They're 1-2 to start the year. Not a great start to the 2024 campaign as the restart for the fourth time has occurred. We said they get one more restart. Are we starting that today? I don't know.
I'm not doing that today.
We're not doing that today?
Not after this weekend series, which is a bummer because there actually were a lot of positives in this weekend series for the Astros. But as always, it's the same stuff. It's the runners in scoring position. It's Ryan Presley. These issues just keep on popping up. And I heard Lance talk about it to open this morning's show with Dell. They've lost 3 of their last 4 series. They're 6-9 their last 15. They haven't won consecutive games since May 18th.
Ooh.
They've scored 3 runs or less in 7 of their last 11. They've scored 2 runs or less in 6 of their last 11. I know we were all joking amongst ourselves. Well, hey, this series had a game that was on Roku. Does the Roku game count? Did they actually split this series? But, I mean, that's where we're at.
Yeah, we're trying to find any reason to not feel super pessimistic. Anger, sad. Whatever words you want to use.
Apathy for me.
Apathy is a good one.
And I think to make matters worse is that Friday, when asked by Adam Spillane about the month of May where they went 15-14, Astros manager Joe Espada had this to say.
Is it disappointing that you had to go 15-14 during, you know, May?
No. Compared the way we started our season, I think we're heading in the right direction. I think we're playing really good baseball. We're facing some – the last 5 days, we're facing some pretty good pitching, and you know, we're getting after it. Our effort is there. Our approach is there. We just gotta continue to push. But, you know, I think we're playing better baseball than what we did a month ago.
That part's true. But you can't say you're playing really good baseball right now.
It's a loser mentality. It's a loser mentality for Joe Espada. The standard for this team is to go to the ALCS. They've gone to 7 straight of them. A majority of your roster is the same that went to Game 7 of the ALCS last year, was 1 game away from rolling the Diamondbacks and winning another World Series. And you're 15-14 in the month of May. And you're happy with their effort, Paul, and that they're trying hard. And they just had a couple, you know, they faced some tough pitching. It's a loser mentality, and it's not to the standard of Houston Astros baseball. That's what the first 2 months of the season have been. So to even try to justify it this way of, yeah, we're 15-14, 1 game above .500. Is that's a satisfactory grade to Joe Espada, it sounds.
They started off the month great, but as I said a little earlier, they're 6-9 in their last 15. That's not really good baseball. Maybe there was really good baseball at one point this month. To your point, I mean, the standard's higher than this. This is what we make fun of the Seattle Mariners for talking about during the offseason, when their general manager, Jerry DePoto, pissed off that entire fan base by saying, we're just shooting to go 54% winning percentage-wise over the next decade. This isn't good enough for us. For others, it is. And if they had not had a bad month of April, we would probably be saying to ourselves, it's not ideal. But at the very least, we could say it doesn't really matter until October. But right now, as the games ahead of you lessen and lessen, you got 100 games left at this point in time, right? 162 game season. You've got 102 games left. And right now, you're on pace for 70 wins. We have enough of a sample size for on pace guy to be correct.
They're a 500 baseball team at best. Last week we had this where they were 80 and 82 in their last 162. Someone put out an update of that. They're like 92 and 90 in their last 182. So you just keep going back and back. They've been a 500 team.
But they want to be a 500 team, Joe. I mean, they're 8 games below 500 right now.
Yeah, but the start of the season was so bad. But to Joe Espada's point, hey, they played good baseball. They are one game above 500.
Really good
baseball. The only time in sports in which it is okay to be one game above 500 is if you have someone that you're paying for gambling picks. Only when you are a sports gambler is it a positive to win 51% of your game, because you're technically winning money then. That is a great gambler who wins 52 to 53% of their games. Good baseball teams don't do that. I know it's a quote and he's just trying to be a positive guy. I think I'm out. I think I'm out on Joe Espada. This is a lame response to me of what you are and the state of the Astros franchise. I think when fans often ask a manager to get thrown out of a game to show passion, to show like that they care, oftentimes it's just showing. You know, like Lou Piniella is not a great manager because he would get tossed out of every Rays game he possibly could. Dusty Baker, when he would occasionally get thrown out, doesn't mean anything, but he's just mad at a call. But Joe Espada says stuff like this. He shows no fire on the field. So to kind of compound what fans are saying with this quote, it seems to be a lack of urgency and a lack of ability to have answers of what's wrong with this team. Because you look at the starting pitching over the last 10 days, they have just above a 2 ERA. They've had the best pitching in the last 10 days in all of Major League Baseball, and their wins are not there.
Wow.
They had four straight quality starts against the Mariners. They won one of those games. You have Arrigetti and Hunter Brown giving you consistently good starts. Fromber was awesome this weekend. He had a no-hitter into the seventh, and they're doing nothing with it because no matter how Joe Espada tinkles with the lineup, it doesn't produce. And that's not all Joe Espada's fault. Yordan Alvarez is hitting 160 this year with runners in scoring position. He's 8-for-50. I think it is, or 8-for-60 this year with runners in scoring position. He's supposed to be the best player on their team. Kyle Tucker has been objectively terrible the last 2 or 3 weeks. They're not playing good baseball, but Joe Espada, whatever he's doing, doesn't work. And to then just be like, yeah, we're good, we're 15-14, we're playing better baseball. Wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. You are not playing better baseball.
I think it's unfair to blame it all on the manager, but you're not doing that right there. You're annoyed by what he's saying, and you're saying you're out on Joe Espada because you don't want to hear from him.
I don't want to hear from him because the team's bad, and then I hate when you are bad, and then you're like, yeah, we're good. Like, you know who's the Mariners talk like that. The Mets talk like this. The Cubs talk like this. Bad baseball teams talk like this. They are below standard of what the Astros are. It's not good enough. It's just not. And someone has to take the blame, and I blame Joe Espada right now.
Do you want to blame him so much right now that you're out of here, that you just can his ass right now?
Yeah, yeah. I would wait till the offseason, because at this point, unless Terry Francona is coming through the door, because it's clearly more than Joe. Like your pitching's inconsistent. Like I said, it's been great the last 10 days. But like Miller and Murphy they had that great year, their first year with all of Strom's work that he did where it went well.
Brent
but it's been not good or below average the last 2 years. The lineup has been a mess. We had to deal with the batter's eye nonsense all of last season. This year, there's just no excuse. There's no excuse this year. They're not even trying. They're not trying to say, well, it's the batter's eye at home. Like, they're just not scoring runs.
There's no urgency.
None.
And the manager should be the one sounding like he has a sense of it. And I think if we've learned anything about Joe Espada to this point, is that he's not very confrontational and that perhaps he's going to be uncomfortable lighting these guys up. Now, does lighting these guys up in the clubhouse make them play better? Make them hit with runners in scoring position? Make Ryan Presley pitch better? I suppose he's had bad luck, but talk about annoying Joe Espada quotes. Joe Espada, when asked about Ryan Presley and the struggles he's had, Espada said that Presley's stuff looked good yesterday. So there's not a sense of urgency. Friday, he's saying we're playing really good baseball after a 15 and 14 month. I'm with you in that I don't want to hear from him. I already don't want to hear from general manager Dana Brown. I know I don't want to hear from Jeff Bagwell. I know that Jim Crane is not going to make himself available.
It's MIA.
So ultimately, you find yourself looking at this team, hoping things get better, seeing some positive developments over the course of the weekend and still seeing the team lose 2 of 3 and going into a series against a St. Louis Cardinals team who has a better record than you. I mean, you're assuming...
Oh, at this point, like everyone has a better record than you.
Well, let's go a little bit further with some Gallon and George math here, which is not always a strong suit of this radio program. So with 102 games left, they need to win 64 of them, since they have 26 wins right now, 26 and 34. They need to win 64 to get to 90. The Mariners are on pace for that, but they are going to have a 63% winning percentage the rest of the way, and they have to win the AL West to make the playoffs. I suppose that some of these teams that are off to a great start in the wild card race are going to cool off a bit, but right now, the Orioles, who are leading the wild card, are on pace for 105 wins, which is a lot.
And bringing up another top prospect.
And the Royals are on pace for 96 wins. Mm-hmm. And ahead of the Royals in the AL Central, the Guardians are playing really well. So you got to win the AL West. It's not impossible. Sure. Some of these teams might cool off. Sure. But you can't just keep on kicking the can down the road and procrastinating like you're me with my damn New Year's cards.
Yeah, we don't have those.
Which yet. I haven't sent out still.
I mean, you see Sean and I. You can just hand them.
Those would be two, but I mean, I still got like 50 to send out.
Like baby steps.
I've sent out 30 of them, but I mean, this is the problem. You can't just keep kicking the can down the road. And this is what I do in my own life all the time. So Astros, as someone who is a master procrastinator, you got to pick it up. Again, just saying be more urgent, make the team actually play better, I don't know. But hearing from Joe Espada on Friday pisses everybody off.
Because it's the wrong answer to give. Just tell the truth. Yeah, we finished a game above 500. We're still not playing to our expectations. We expect to play better baseball than this. We are going to strive to achieve to play better baseball than this. We need to get everyone back. We just lost two more starters. They're not pitching until 2026, I would guess. Like, we're hoping to get Luis Garcia and Lance McCullers back. The line, Alex Bregman's played much better baseball. Like, we still have a lot of work to do. Instead, it's, no, we played good baseball. Like, much better than the first month. We're going to be all right. We're going to figure it out. Ryan Presley's good. What? What part of Ryan Presley is good? He's not even Stressley anymore. He's no longer Ryan Stressley.
Supposedly, he has just the worst luck because the batting average on balls in play is like 400 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the expected batting average is something like 235, but they're actually hitting 308 against him. So there's that.
Ryan Messley.
Every time Ryan comes in, I know we're losing.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't.
This game's over. Turn the channel.
With Abreu, and Abreu's been up and down this season, but with Abreu, there's at least the thought in your head, like, this could be a clean inning. Haters, yeah, actually to the point where you kind of expect it to, like, he won't make things worse. Ryan Presley, not so much. He is in, Paul, this might be sacrilege or whatever, the opposite of sacrilege. This might be too damning. He's kind of in the Montero zone, where I'm always prepared for I mean, it to be a mess. Ryan Messley.
Yeah. Ryan Messley. Ryan Stressley was what it was before and has progressed into that. Douglas Posada comments on our YouTube channel at ESPN Houston. Need a team meeting ASAP.
We haven't heard about one of those.
I'm actually surprised that we haven't had a Brian McTaggart, Chandler Rome. Yeah, guys had a team meeting after the Sunday's loss against the Twins.
I think most people are in agreement that a Joe Espada-held meeting is probably not going to light the fire and get the troops ready to go. Just probably is not going to do it.
It's the Steven Silas press conference. They're not listening.
Okay. To be honest, doesn't he kind of remind you of Silas?
There's some vibes. Silas-like tendencies.
Yeah, it's the demeanor. And that's in which it's so chill.
That's really what it is.
Yeah.
It's the demeanor where you're just like, and this is a team. I don't know if they need a kick in the pants. They could use a kick in the pants. We could try a kick in the pants. And he just doesn't seem like the guy to do it. Much like Silas didn't seem like the guy for those Rockets teams.
The difference is those young Rockets teams, you could understand why Silas was perhaps a little bit laxed. Young players.
Yeah. More patient.
No stakes.
They weren't expected to be a title team or anything. This team was expected to be a title team.
Espada has been here for a long time. That's what I can't get past. And okay, we're focusing on one quote from Friday night, but I'm sure a lot of people haven't talked about it because it's a Friday news dump. He said they're playing really good baseball right now. How can anyone in that clubhouse feel that way when they can't hit with runners in scoring position? All of their runs are coming courtesy of solo home runs. Mm-hmm. They're not winning games. As Joe said, their starting pitching is pitching the best in baseball right now. It is. Brown's been really good the last three starts.
Damn good.
Spencer Arrighetti's been good. Ronel Blanco, okay, on Friday, finally he comes back to earth a little bit because they're fouling off a ton of balls against him. Fromber had a no-hitter going into the seventh on Saturday. They won that game. They get runs to help him out then, but whatever change is needed, I do not believe Espada is going to be the one to bring it. And I totally understand, Joe, why you are out on Joe Espada right now. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in as well. You can join us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, or on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/ESPN Houston. Is there anything the Houston Astros can do to create urgency? Something actually happened with one of their American League West rivals that shows that this team's taking things a little bit more seriously. Plus, yesterday's TV broadcast was bad. Both of those next. Stick around. First, let me tell you about my friends at the Highway Cantina, where you can get a 975 tall Texan margarita and drown your sorrows. Because, listen, you don't want to go to the park. You want to just go to the Highway Cantina and get yourself some of that salsa verde, salsa roja. I've been taking Duolingo. Guys, it's not just the drinks there at the Highway Cantina. The food is fantastic. And, yeah, even your standard chips and salsa. No, it's different there. Your fajitas, different there. Yeah, wood-fired oysters, too, if you want to get those. I had those last time I was in there. Oh, my God, it was so good. Ooh. Man, I want some right now. I'm starting to get a little bit hungry. Should have brought some into work today. But there's all sorts of different things that you can get at the Highway Cantina. We had the large marge. You're there with a couple of friends. You can have essentially a Scorpion Bowl edition of their margaritas, which are really, really good. It's right in the middle of East Downtown. You want to go there for a work happy hour? It's right there. You want to impress the boss, take a date? It's right there, right by the ballpark as well. It's the Highway Cantina. Tell them Paul Gallant sent you by.
Kane is in the building.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
The Seattle Mariners are in first place in the American League West, but they are not above making things happen. The team that wants to go 54% over the course of this decade to jumpstart their season, because they have the second worst offense in all of baseball, 29th in runs per game. They fired on Friday their bench coach and offensive coordinator, Brant Brown, Joe. I don't know what the hell an offensive coordinator does in baseball.
Don't really know either. All I know is Spencer Arrighetti out here getting people fired. He dominated them so much that he was like, guys, look at this dude with long hair. He's got to go.
I mean, they won 3 of 4 against the team that's been to 7 straight.
And they fired their hitting coach.
Canned his ass. Understandable, though. I mean, they are not scoring runs at all. And you do look at their offense and wonder, what the hell's going on? Julio Rodriguez is off to a pretty slow start. But the Mariners are willing to do that. And I do not know that firing Joe Espada would make things better for the Houston Astros the rest of the way. But when you hear what he said on Friday, where he said that the Astros are playing really good baseball after a 15-14 month that they ended with, I believe, you know, losing. Let me do a little math here. I know that over the last 15 that they have gone 6-9. Mm-hmm. So to wrap up the month, a bit of a dud, and to open up the month, not feeling great either. You're 1-1, I guess, to open June. Great.
Great. Great start.
Awesome. But you need to be better than that. You got to win, essentially, the rest of the way at a 63% clip just to get to 90 wins, which doesn't necessarily get you anything. It would win you the AL West last year. Is it going to win the AL West this year?
Probably not.
I mean, the Mariners are on pace for 90 wins right now, despite being 29th in baseball and runs per game. Is firing Brant Brown going to make the offense better? You would think so, because it can't possibly get any worse. For the Astros, the problem is there are a lot of statistical categories where they are doing very well. Hitting, starting pitching of late.
Yep.
But you don't trust the bullpen.
No, you don't. So that's where, like, I don't know if the position coaches, I don't know if any of it fixes the Astros. They seem to be broken. Like to lead so many offensive categories, but then of your last 18 runs, as you said, 17 of those runs have come from home runs. Oof. So how do you only have these home runs, and then you're not getting any guys in with runners in scoring position? Like, it's not. I know the Astros were doing well, and then things are going poor again with Jose Abreu back in the lineup. Like he's not the reason why this team is falling apart. It really is the guys at the top. It's been Bregman, it's Alvarez, it's Tucker, it's Altuve. Like those are the guys, Peña as well, that they don't have great numbers consistently with runners in scoring position. I mean, now Jose Abreu is 3-for-15 since he came back. So that's not
good. Had a home run on Saturday, though.
Got a home run.
3-for-15 is 200. That is twice his average.
That's a good point, Paul.
Yeah.
He has significantly improved.
Lowered expectations.
I mean, they didn't look, they said they wanted his bat speed to be fixed and they wanted him to be better. He's achieved that.
That home run was 105 miles per hour.
Yeah, he's hitting 200.
It was right center field. I mean, yeah, it was an oppo.
The back of his baseball card says that before he went to Florida, he was hitting .088. When he came back from Florida, he's hitting 200.
It's trending up. Text, if we are tied or behind going into the seventh inning, I will take that bet any time that we lose. If we are not up by 3 runs going into the eighth, it's a 50-50 shot. Does feel that way. Another couple of texts. This is about a possible team meeting where Joe Espada is probably not going to be the one to inspire the troops. But we haven't heard a players-only meeting yet. Eric the Driver suggested Carlos Correa. He was in town.
Makes sense.
I don't think he was playing, so you could have come host of the meeting. Another person texted in, a Zoom meeting with Martin Maldonado perhaps would help. I don't know. Zoom meetings do not really grasp people's attention.
Yeah, I don't think that a Zoomer with Martin Maldonado is gonna fix the issues. Carlos maybe more would have had a better chance to do so. More likely we hear a team meeting or another article in which players are behind the scenes complaining to media members, front offices, and it starts to leak out. Thinking back to the two players that said Joe Espada had poor communication. Do you think we get a team meeting first or another one of those kind of players upset with the Espada stories?
I feel like that's the most logical.
I think so too.
Outcome. I feel the fact that it's happened already, it'll just be a little bit louder this time.
Yeah, and to my knowledge, maybe there's one under the radar that we didn't talk about or didn't make a big deal about. I don't think there's been a players-only meeting that's been reported on thus far.
We were talking about that a little bit. To our knowledge,
I don't think there has been one. It's about time for one. Yeah. I mean, Justin Verlander supposedly spoke to the team,
but that
after coming back.
I guess that would that count? I don't know. Maybe McCullers can give another one when he comes back.
There's some tweets about maybe it looked like around the Chicago series that there was a team meeting. But there's only like one or two of them, so I don't think it was like a big publicized thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we saw one this weekend. I can't remember which team. Oh no, I guess it was last week with the Mets. Before the whole Jorge Lopez thing happened, they had a closed-door team meeting before the media was allowed into the clubhouse. So that's how you really know when a team meeting happens, is the media is not allowed to do their job until they're done yelling at each other. We haven't had one of those yet, where like Chandler and McTaggart and all those guys are not allowed in.
I'm a little concerned that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
I would be okay with them having as many team meetings as we've restarted the season this year. So if you would have told me they've had three team meetings this year, I'd be like, that's appropriate. You don't want too many team meetings because then they start to lose meaning. Whoa. Team meetings or else they
had quite a few last year, I think, towards the end of the season.
It felt like it. So every time they blew a
they really
series
were.
Against,
hey, but, against but what the, happened? They went to the ALCS. They got to game seven.
I mean, they backed into winning the division.
Did it work?
Those meetings did not work.
Flags fly forever.
Yeah. I mean, look.
AL West flag flies forever.
The results say.
Outside the stadium.
They achieved their goals, kind of.
The other teams sucked more than they did in that month.
Yes, but you know what? They did enough. In Joe Espada's eyes, they did enough.
Yep. You know, it's fun to be sarcastic and all, but when the Rangers won the World Series still, out of all of that, I mean, come on.
They probably had a team meeting after they struggled, too.
Yeah, after their Letterman jacket fiasco, yeah. Right, which
probably
I thought
team meeting.
Doomed them. And also when the Astros smoked him in Arlington, which I also thought doomed them. Do you know what doomed my Sunday? That Roku TV broadcast. That was garbage. And poor TK stuck with no energy LaTroy Hawkins, who I guess was a great reliever for the Minnesota Twins and is Patrick Mahomes' godfather. I'm sorry. I have never heard anyone with less energy talk about a dying sport. I mean, try to kill baseball some more, Roku TV. That was dreadful.
It was not good. And then, honestly,
it started at noon, too? Kiss my ass!
Well, that's their whole thing. These Roku broadcasts are going to be the first game of the day. So it's like, if anyone wants to watch baseball, the only place you can watch is on Roku.
Oh, so I have to download this stupid Roku TV app to my actual Roku TV, which apparently didn't have it, to watch this game that starts at noon with no advance notice about it, because baseball never announces any of the things that they add to the game to try to make it better, and then we got this drip on the broadcast ruining it? It pissed me off. I get really mad with ex-athletes who come into this profession and believe that they can just do it by showing up or by doing it with zero energy. And LaTroy Hawkins, I'm sure, a great major league player. But my God, dude, do you hate the sport that made you a millionaire? Because it sounded like you did. Every effing second of that guy talking was a effing snooze fest. I was trying not to fall asleep listening to the game while doing the dishes. I was falling asleep while standing because of LaTroy Hawkins. And this guy is getting paid, I'm sure, a ton of money to absolutely mail it in next to TK. He was awful. I got annoyed about this only because Ari Alexander, who I like, of KPRC, told me, put some respect on LaTroy Hawkins' name. Nope, he doesn't respect his job. He got a check, fat old check, showed up, did absolutely nothing. This sport is dying because of people like that. You've already lost me. You're going to lose everybody else because they're all going to jump off a effing bridge if they hear that guy talking about baseball.
I think my favorite part was like how bad of a business model that they're running out there. Because like you can click this link to watch the game. You don't have to sign up for Roku. I was like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, I don't have Roku now. I clicked the link. The game was there. It was free 99. Also, as you know, we get tweeted out here from not Santa, Astros legend LaTroy Hawkins.
He did play for the Astros.
He had a 1.71 ERA.
25 different teams.
He did. Look, I'm on his baseball reference page.
You got
to double check that he actually pitched for the Astros. It took a while. It was 2008, 2009, so, you know, he was 35, 36. He pitched
Glory years of Astros baseball, 2008, 2009.
The best years. So, you know, Astros legend. Latroy Hawkins.
What glory years are we talking about? Are we talking about the years where Carlos Lee was eating the salary that he was given to by the Astros? Because that's what Latroy Hawkins was doing in yesterday's game.
I think one of the years was good, Carlos Lee.
I will say, I do appreciate from Roku, though, even though I also didn't like Latroy. He was not
He was
good.
Terrible. I'm sorry. I know I'm passionate about this and the Astros losing two or three. He sucked.
It was better than the way that Apple was doing it. I would rather have TK and then the color analyst from the road team, which is, I guess, how they're doing all the Roku broadcasts, than having, like, that dummy Katie Nolan on my television.
Oh, don't hate on
Disagree.
Katie. Don't hate on Katie, wife of comedian, great Dan Soder.
She's not good.
And she's more than just who she's married to, Paul.
Yeah. She was great on Fox, but ESPN and then the baseball Katie Nolan was very terrible. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed this more than those broadcasts, mm-hmm. but it was not good. I missed Blum.
Didn't those broadcasts also have Hunter Pence?
He was on some of them.
Actual Astros legend?
Yeah, he was on some of them, not all of them. Okay. Yeah.
From the 832, now you know how we feel listening to you. It's dreadful. But at least I care.
Hey.
Because I have energy.
That's
unlike
so mean.
Energy vampire Latroy Hawkins. David Culley wishes he had that energy. Lovie Smith wishes he had that energy. I mean, my God.
Guys, the mean texts are for the angry bees, not for us. Come on. That was mean.
I don't care.
It's Monday.
That. I don't care about mean
Be
texts.
Nice.
No, I actually kind of encourage mean texts. I do. Because it means that people care, unlike Latroy Hawkins yesterday.
Yeah, he is.
It is interesting that he's Patrick Mahomes' godfather.
That is interesting.
I guess.
Very interesting.
I mean, there's nothing to talk about there. It's just
It's a fun fact.
Yeah.
Apparently, Reggie Jackson was gassing him up at some point during the broadcast, too. So Reggie Jackson was there. Great.
Yeah.
Oh, getting all the favorites.
By the way, I
trust his eye for talent.
Speaking of Friday night, I thought it was very funny that as we talked about rabbit ears on Friday with the Astros organization, that Anita was then in the booth for way too long.
Oh, my God.
That was the longest inning ever. I know that those are the rules. If someone comes into the booth, you keep them for the whole inning. That inning took forever.
A forced promotional interview. There's an 11-pitch at-bat, and Todd Callis had to, in the middle of the at-bat, say, oh, by the way, an 11-pitch at-bat. And, I mean, like, they're just talking about Hello Kitty night. And I was thinking to myself, well, we're going to bring back Jose Abreu on Ironically night. It was Saturday, and he hit a home run.
Yeah.
Hey. Huh? Worked out.
Someone got a free baseball.
And that's what you got. That's all you can do.
Anyway, guys, yeah, I'm sorry. That was an aggressive outburst.
Okay. Hey, you know what? Sometimes you speak your mind. No,
I don't apologize to Latroy Hawkins, though. I'm sorry. If you're an ex-athlete and you're getting paid a ton of money to do that, have some energy, okay?
Makes you I mean, not that we need to enjoy Blummer anymore, but hey.
Made me appreciate Blummer
a lot.
That's
what the Twins have to live with.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, it could be worse.
Yeah.
It could be worse. I'm pretty sure we're going to play the White Sox audio from this weekend at some point today.
Hey, at least they were energetic.
He was energetic. He's a loser.
He was cutting a promo.
We'll get to those later.
Speaking of fighting words, there was some squabbing going on in a sport that, honestly, rest of the summer might be more entertaining to talk about than the Astros. We'll discuss next.
Forward to that one. Tell you about our friends at OAthletic and check them out, oathletic.com, 767 North Shepherd. Over 100 classes per week you can take. They're in the morning, the afternoon, and when you get off work. They start up about 4:30 again, so you get off work early, go get a class in. They have them all day, Monday through Sunday, and you have a variety of different classes that you can take, from weightlifting to agility training. If you want to do boxing, MMA, it's all there. They have the ring and the octagon, so you can take all those kinds of classes. You can sign up for personal training as well. I can't recommend Cam enough, that I the guy I work with on a weekly basis. And you can do 1, 3, 5 training sessions a week. So whatever your goals are for 2024, look, we're halfway through. Okay, we're halfway through the year, so maybe you're starting a little late. There's no better time than now. Summer's here. You want to lose some weight before the summer? This is your time. So whether you want to lean out, lose some weight, put on muscle mass, whatever it is, I can't recommend O Athletic enough for you. It's the gym for me. It should be the gym for you. And tell them Joe George sent you by.
We're back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
Astros lost 2 of 3 over the weekend against the Minnesota Twins. Question we do have in this first hour of the show, can the Astros do anything to create a sense of urgency? Because both Joe and I doubt that it's coming
from Joe Espada, the manager of this team?
If they were to, like, to, I'd cut Abreu to start. Like, that's where it creates a sense of urgency. That's it.
After a home run on Saturday?
I think they're trying to start a little bit by, it seems to have, benching Yiner Diaz.
They have benched him.
He started only one of the three games this weekend?
Correct. Caratini started the last two. Chaz McCormick also seen some pine time. I think they're realizing that. What's interesting with Abreu is I think the Astros also, at least multiple beat writers acknowledged that when Abreu has actually hit decently, he has had an off day the day before.
He's old.
Going back to last year's postseason.
Old man.
Sadly, he's only 2 years older than me. From what we know, based off of the age that's on the back of his baseball card.
Well, Miguel Tejada aged 4 years in his 2 years with the Astros, so you never know.
I mean, Abreu looks, he like physically looks much older than the way he plays or the way he's supposed to play. Like, he looks like he's 45.
He does move around like an old man.
Yeah.
And there's something about his build is also, he has old man strength, but he's, again, 2 years older than Paul, who, no offense, Paul. Oh, no, this isn't offensive. You don't have old man strength. Mm-hmm. You just have, like, strength, wiry.
I mean, at least you call him strong.
Yeah.
That's a nice thing to say.
You don't look like someone, okay, Jose Abreu looks like he's like a dad that you won't want to mess with. Paul Gallant does not look like a dad. Hmm. And to our knowledge, is not a dad.
Do I look like somebody that you'd want to mess with?
No.
There's a lot of hesitation there.
Because some of it is I know the junkyard dog that's hiding in those
look how triggered
shirts.
He just got by a broadcast.
I got in a shouting match with somebody at football on Saturday.
But I don't know that if, you know, I just bump into him at a bar. I'm like, hey, watch it, buddy. And I see you with a Syracuse Orange shirt on. I'm like, oh. Maybe I can try.
I played in a football game on Saturday morning in the hail, which was fun. And one of the players on the other team would not shut up. And the problem was he sucked. So eventually I snapped. I bit my tongue for a while, but he was horrible. He had like five drops. And every single time the drop happened, he made a huge excuse. Mm. And it drove me crazy. And eventually he said that someone on our team who made a nice catch didn't make a catch. And then I just lit him up. And I felt very therapeutic. Much like lighting up with Troy Hawkins.
You want to go watch? Can we be like,
you can watch if you want.
Fans in the stands?
You can watch if you want. I mean, I didn't really do much in this game.
I'll find some.
You're a team player. Sometimes the game plan is.
Oh, there was another person on my team that I also lit up.
A humble moment from Paul.
What?
You literally told me you got the game-winning touchdown.
Game-winning touchdown, game-winning interception, but everyone was tired at that point. I don't think
that's game smart. Winning. That's smart. You saved yourself.
Maybe we could find some like A&M, like the male cheerleaders to come root for Paul.
You know what? You know what's better than
talking? I do know someone that was.
Interesting.
So
Josh Beard was a man.
I do know someone that was the guy, one of those dudes. That
yell leaders?
A yell leader.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe we can like round up the gang and do it for Paul.
No. Set the other team
For Paul Gallant's flag football game.
No, here's what we want to talk about instead of me playing flag football on a Saturday morning.
I don't know.
We want to talk about women's basketball because, amazingly, women's basketball has hijacked the front page of sports, if you will.
Because baseball sucks,
partly due to that, but also partly due to the fact that the drama of WNBA basketball is about as dramatic as it gets. The actual basketball itself, well, let's just say that the actual basketball play that led up to this moment was one of the uglier displays of basketball I've seen in a very long time. It was a bunch of just really ugly missed layups underneath the hoop that reminded me a little bit of watching fourth graders. But hey, in an ugly sequence between Chicago and Indiana, Caitlin Clark of the Indiana Fever said something to Chinity Carter of the Chicago Sky after a bucket put Indiana up 6. Some are claiming Clark elbowed Chinity. I'm not sure that I buy that, but some people were zooming in, and everyone has to have a diehard take on this, and we're overanalyzing the hell out of it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, on the other end of the court, after that bucket for Indiana to go up 6, Chinity Carter hits a shot. As they're about to inbound the ball to Caitlin Clark, Indiana,
Chenity Carter goes up to Clark, says the B word, drops down a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and puts a full-on shoulder into Caitlin Clark and Dexter as the ball, before the ball can even be inbounded. Angel Reese, who plays for the Chicago Sky, got up to celebrate immediately as it happened.
Mm-hmm.
It was only called a common foul. That moment blew up on the internet on Saturday.
Big time.
I was stunned by how many people were discussing it. And the WNBA and the coverage of Caitlin Clark has entered the culture war, which is where you know that, okay, maybe there's not a lot of things going on in the world of sports or in the world as a whole, although there's some things going on in the world. But people were really focused on this Caitlin Clark stuff. Joe, what did you think when you saw it?
Well, first of all, like, this is great for them. Like, anyone that thinks this is bad for the WNBA is an idiot. Okay, I just put Caitlin Clark on Twitter. Here's what I see. Austin Rivers, Pat McAfee, Dan Patrick, they've been talking about it on First Take all morning long. Like, for the first time, congratulations. Your sport nationwide is relevant. Whether it's because Caitlin Clark, the basketball player who scored 3 points in her last game. Yikes. But her, like, aura, like everything going around her has made the WNBA really relevant for the first time as a sport ever. So this is great for them. This is, any publicity is good publicity. You are giving people a reason to watch. You are having heroes and villains no matter what side of the story you want. You can look at Caitlin Clark and say she's the problem because of XYZ. You can go on your liberal, she's white, this is why everyone's rooting for her thing if you want. Like, go for it. Or you can go the other side, that Carter is a dirtbag. Like, and she's a cheap shot. Meanwhile, she's liking all these tweets on Twitter, which I love this move, about how it's a great play. Like, this is all good. This is all good for the WNBA.
I got to say, and this might get me in trouble, but the way that I think Chenity Carter acted in that moment was C-word behavior. Now, hey, listen, sometimes people are a-holes in the middle of games. Yeah. But the way that she acted, okay, was it the cheapest play ever? No, but it was clearly dirty. It was clearly out of bounds.
A little bit of a sell job by Clark.
No doubt, but it was more of a sell job by Caitlin Clark against that fan from Ohio State than it was in this moment there.
There's real content, but as she's going down, you can see her putting her arms out to look at the ref. And at that point, I'm like, this is not that hard of a foul if you have time before you hit the ground to appeal to the ref.
She had an annoyed look on her face that you could catch in the slow motion replay as she's falling to the court. But to what Joe's saying, Caitlin Clark is women's basketball Jesus. She is suffering so that the WNBA can thrive.
I also, like,
it helps them out when everyone's taking shots at her and physically hitting her. It, as Joe said, this is good for the league because we are talking about it.
I would even say it's better. Like Joe mentioned, she had 3 points in Sunday's game. No one talks about it. No one cares because she didn't get pushed down to the ground. This is what actually is better than if she walked into the league and dominated. This is better 100%. Because it's setting up, like you said, heroes and villains in this story where it's like, oh, our hero is going through struggles now. This isn't the Big Ten anymore.
Yeah, it's like the play itself, I don't care. I think the reaction to this is for the most part, is really weird. I think it's because she's a woman, even though it's other women on the court, people are think this is jarring. But you, like, Victor Wembanyama took cheap shots. LeBron James took cheap shots. Every time you hear an NFL podcast, I'm sure we're going to talk about CJ, a recent podcast he did. I can't imagine how many times CJ Stroud in the last year has been asked, what's your rookie to the NFL moment? And typically what follows that question is a cheap shot. It's a story about a cheap shot. It's a story about how a rookie got put in their place by a player on the opposing team because people think it's their right as a veteran in sports. It happens in hockey. It happens in basketball. Like, it's just the way sports work. So the overreaction to this, for most people, I think is really bizarre. Like, I don't really understand why everyone thinks this is such a big deal that she got a cheap shot in which, she kind of throws an elbow on a rebound the play before. It's not a dirty play.
It's because, one, people are watching women's basketball for the first time ever. And, two, it's been a really long time since someone has entered a sport and they have been legitimately on attack from all sides by the entirety of the league, it seems like. I can't remember the last time it was like this. I don't know that people were trying to take out LeBron. Now, LeBron is a big guy, so going to be a little bit more difficult to do that. People weren't doing this with Steph because Steph took a couple of years for Steph to become Steph, no matter how good he was at Davidson. There really hasn't been this in the NFL. Quarterbacks are so damn protected right now. Someone, I think Pro Football Talk suggested that maybe with Reggie Bush there was a little bit of a pushback from NFL
Vito
players.
Vito Shepard hit. Oh, right. My God.
So, I mean, it's happened before, but it's been a while, and a lot of people that are focusing on this for the first time are not even people who really like sports. So this is totally new to them, and yeah, of course, they're going to overanalyze it. I think it's great for the sport. I think we all will agree that it is gaining the sport more publicity. The only thing that I don't like about it is that I think, one, Angel Reese, you got to talk afterwards. You got to talk afterwards. You're soft if you're not talking afterwards. Soft boys, soft gals. You'll be back at Wednesday. And Chenity Carter as well. After the game, Chenity Carter is at the podium. And this is how the Chicago Sky handled a question about literally the most important thing that happened in this game.
Chenity, on the play before bumping in with Caitlin, it seemed like she turned to you a little bit after the Fever score.
I didn't answer no Caitlin Clark questions.
Did she say anything to you?
I don't know what she said.
What'd you say to her?
I didn't say anything.
That's enough.
That's enough. That was her coach. Yeah. That's enough.
And then her coach today said that she was in the wrong, apparently.
Because she was!
But even then, like, it's okay. Like, it's okay. This isn't... She didn't go Draymond. She dropped a hard shoulder.
Yeah, she didn't kick anybody in the hoo-ha.
On the NBA, because this is our frame of reference for this thing, she was closer to Patrick Beverley than she was to Draymond Green. It was a very Pat Bev move. It was a Pat Bev get in your face, clap in your face, and body you up. It wasn't, Draymond Green stomping a hole in Sabonis' chest.
Yeah, like, it's okay. Like, this is okay.
She got a flagrant one after the game. She was not fined. Angel Reese was fined $1,000 for not making herself available. The Sky, as a team, were fined $5,000. Afterwards, Carter was liking a bunch of tweets saying it was justified and then put on Threads, quote, "That's that on that, because besides three-point shooting, what does Clark bring to the table, man?" But this is what I don't understand. If you don't like her, say it publicly. Guess what? It's also great for the WNBA if you're in front of a microphone going Carlos Correa, looking directly at the camera and saying mean things about Caitlin Clark. It's good. And now, maybe it's not good as a whole. It doesn't really bring attention to the sport. But is the NBA not the NBA largely due to some of the drama that takes place off the court? Well, the WNBA clearly has the makings of more drama than the NBA, than the NFL, with teams and players that actually hate each other on teams. That's great. Don't you wish that you had that in men's sports from time to time?
Yeah, I mean, think about like if they show a promo for the next time the Fever play the Sky on ESPN, I'm now going to be inclined to watch some of that game. And maybe they make a fan out of
it. Yeah, it was just on the TV in the studio during the bullpen on Saturday. So Brian and I were just watching this into the end of the game, kind of passively, as you do in commercial breaks or just as you kind of glance over. And yeah, I was like, oh yeah, this is a close game, and it's Angel Reese, and I was like, oh yeah, this is, and like seeing a WNBA game on TV on mute while I'm doing a radio show, I was like, oh yeah, there's like things here, there's storylines that I can immediately identify here, and it was a close game, but this to me, a lot of it is the fact that it's the WNBA and it's women. Being physical as opposed to men, because it's not like a novel concept to be like the star and the other team. How are we going to stop them, or stop in this case her? Rough them up. We can't go shot for shot with her. So let's just get physical. And yeah, like, this is not groundbreaking strategy here.
You guys know that I'm a big supporter of women. And to what you were saying earlier, maybe we're not used to seeing this, but I will say women's sports does have some actual toughness. Have you ever watched women's soccer? Women's soccer, they F each other up and they get right back up. There's no I spent about 15 minutes this weekend highlighting to a couple of Brazilian women how soft soccer is, because these guys play with no honor and they flop. And they were trying to explain to me his gamesmanship. And I was like, then why don't the women do it? The women don't do it. Women's soccer, they don't really do it in except for on Brazil, ironically. But in women's basketball as well. Okay, maybe there's a little bit of a Clark there by flop there by Caitlin Clark.
But it is in general Clark, more physical. Sign. It is generally more physical. Like if you're watching, I saw
they get away with more.
I saw a clip because people were like, "This is not new. Like roughing up the star rookie in the league is not new for the WNBA." And I saw a clip from Candace Parker's rookie year where there's literally punches thrown in a WNBA game. I was like, I have no memory of this happening.
I don't either.
Like that, it was crazy.
It's just, it's all good for them though, and how they capitalize on this, like that's the question. Like that's what like, the NBA fails to do is their sport kind of dies, in my opinion. If you look at their ratings, that's what the ratings will tell you. Is that there's all this drama and there's all these storylines in the NBA, but then they fail to capitalize it like when they're actually on TV and look, they're getting rid of now their best broadcast after the next year to one of their biggest champions of the sport, even though they talk a lot of trash.
Yeah,
the NBA.
All they do is talk about how it sucks.
They do talk about trash. But like I don't know, like it's just not that big of a deal to me. Like the text line here is calling me a moron because like I'm trying to push back because they think it's you know bullying, whatever. Like, it's not that serious. It's a shoulder check. Like, this is not a cheap shot. This is not what happened to Rudy T, okay? Like, this is not a sucker punch to the face in which her career... She got knocked down and she got back up. She's fine.
But the way that they are acting... We can't act like it's not happening. It's
no.
They clearly do not like her.
What, fine.
And it's jealousy.
That's good. It is jealousy. And it's a good thing that they don't like her. Like you need things to happen.
I you know what else, though, you need, Joe? And this was brought up by Matt Barnes. Someone's got to stand up for her. I mean, if you saw someone do this to one of your teammates, I mean, I'm sorry. This is fighting. This is fighting words. If someone does that, you better at least shove that person after she wrecks the star of your team that's also allowing you to fly charter jets. Here is Matt Barnes on All the Smoke outlining why he feels like Caitlin Clark's teammates are letting her down.
So there's a hot topic going on right now. Caitlin Clark says she got cheap shotted against the sky. I mean, throughout the season, she's been getting beat up. Hard screens, elbows, knocked down. It is what it is. She's not the first. She won't be the last. My issue and my question is, where the f*** are her teammates at? Where are y'all at? Where are the rest of the Indiana Fever at? I've seen a couple girls smirk when she's got knocked down, half-assed to pick her up. Like, y'all supposed to protect the asset, protect the star. And all this is the team. She's the star. You always protect your star. I was someone who protected the stars. You f*** with Kobe, CP, Blake, list goes on. It's going to be a problem because you guys are supposed to be a family. And you wonder why you sit at the bottom of the league right now is because y'all don't protect each other, man. Coach don't do shit about it. Players don't shoot shit about it. Y'all should be ashamed of it. But the rest of the league is going to continue to test her. And that's what they're supposed to do. It's your guys' job to have her back and have each other's back. Got to do better, ladies.
Said family.
I do wonder if she's not liked by her teammates. Like, if this was any other sport, that would be the assumption that we would make.
There's probably a little bit of jealousy with her teammates as well because of the elevated profile that she's had without having done a damn thing at the WNBA level. And it's unfair for her from this perspective. She went straight from college basketball to playing professional women in like 2 weeks. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like she goes to the national championship, loses, drafted, and the season has already started.
Although
it's a big adjustment.
As far as nuts and bolts, it makes sense why the WNBA does it like this because we're talking about them at 12:50 today. And if they started their season when the NBA started their season, we would not be talking about this because there'd be football, college football, NBA. There'd be so much. So
hockey.
This is good that they're competing against baseball and the Olympics. Like that's good. But
fights.
There is what.
More fights though, and her teammates gotta get in on the action.
I was surprised that the game did not stop for like 2 minutes. I'm not even saying you had to actually fight; just need to be separated, fake fight.
Truly.
Like just do that. We talk about how the NBA is soft. At least they do that.
The game just resumed. Yeah, in the NBA they review it for like 8 minutes on whether or not it's a flagrant 73 or 74.
At least like PJ Washington like acts tough. You know, at least he's acting tough. These girls aren't even acting. And it is fair to wonder. And at this point, I am starting to be like, is it all jealousy as to why they don't like Caitlin Clark? Is there a possibility that Caitlin Clark personality sucks?
I think it's a fair question. Like none of your teammates are coming.
Teammates don't
ever
stick up for you.
Like at some point, you think you would get annoyed. I mean, think about like Jeremy and Joel and I. Like we were on the B's together. Like Jeremy went on like a 3-week. A season-long tirade against Laramie Tunsil for not picking up C.J. Stroud early on in the season and being a bad teammate. Like this is a normal conversation in sports. Her teammates are nowhere to be found. It's kind of weird.
Very bizarre. Maybe it'll change now after this moment. Yeah. Joe George, Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Are you supposed to respond here as a teammate? You can answer that if you want. Also, diving back into the Astros. What's annoying about this weekend is all of the positives that happened in a series where the Astros lost 2 of 3. We will list them and see if that actually means anything good going forward. Next, stick around.
ESPN 97.5.